This is Telling Tales with Ms. G here at 104.3 KTOO in Juneau. And I have a story for you tonight by Ms. Shay Youngblood. So please stay tuned, come right back, and I'll start my short story. This is Ms. G. I'm back with Telling Tales here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau. Tonight's story is by Shay Youngblood, amazing writer. And she is giving us Spit in the Governor's Tea. December 1959 was the year Miss Shine got even for 400-year-old wrongs. I was born that year. So the story was told to me, and long as I'm black, I'll never forget it. Every Christmas Eve when Big Mama and all the other grown folks went shopping downtown, Justine Baker would come to our apartment to sit with me. Even though she was only in her 20s, she could tell stories good as Aunt May, Big Mama, and Aunt Vi. I especially liked the one she told me every Christmas Eve. The one about Miss Shine. Justine was a little on the plump side because she had a terrible sweet tooth. She wore loose cotton house dresses with pockets that hid penny candy and big pink curlers in her hair every day but Sunday when she sang in the choir. Her voice was soprano and real pretty, so she usually had the star position in the choir stand as the soloist. I loved hearing her catch notes with her voice and then letting them fly over our heads in the congregation like birds. When Justine was telling a story, her voice was like that, too, high, sweet, and strong. After I got in my red foodie pajamas, brushed my teeth, and said my prayers, Justine would light Big Mama's kerosene lamp, put me in the middle of Big Mama's bed, and sit looking at me from Big Mama's rocking chair. She would fold her plump hands in her lap and rock slow, backward and forward, as she told me Miss Shine's story. Round Christmas time, there's a whole lot of things in the air you can't see. Things that make you smile at folks you don't even know and speak to your worst enemy. People get in what you call the Christmas spirit. I like to think it was the Christian spirit and folks would do it every day of the year, but the world just ain't like that. This Christmas spirit infects everybody like a disease. Everything is amazement. Well, this particular December, I'm going to tell you about, wasn't much different. At the start of December, our chorus teacher told my class we had been chosen to sing Christmas carols at the governor's mansion. For weeks, all the kids that lived in the projects talked about was the school chorus singing at the governor's mansion on Christmas Eve. Glodine, Jimmy, Pearl, and me was all in the choir at church, too, so everybody knowed we would make our mamas proud. Your big mama was just as excited as everybody else, but when she heard, she couldn't help but say out loud, "With all the mess the governor been stirring up, standing in the schoolhouse door to keep our children from an equal education, now the children are going to have opportunity to show him they know a little something already." "Amen," Miss Shine broke in. "I'm going to be there to see our children show out. The governor done asked me already to stay past sundown on Christmas Eve." Miss Shine had worked in the governor's mansion ever since her husband, Mr. Polk, died and left her with no insurance money and a heap of bills to pay. When Mr. Polk was living, he used to cuss a mean blue streak when Miss Shine spoke about working. "What you want to work for?" he would scream, so everybody in the neighborhood could hear and know he was a man. "What you mean? I work every day. I near about break my back cleaning up after you. We got bills to pay, and I want some nice things round here, like some new curtains on the window. Set of that old sheet I sewed up so folks couldn't look in. A flower garden and a new hat for church once in a while. Shine, where can you work? On your rusty knees in some white folks' kitchen, bringing that nasty clothes in my house? No, ma'am, I ain't going to stand for you working for them folks as long as I can swing this hammer." He would end up swinging his railroad hammer over his bald head. Mr. Polk worked on the railroad for over 30 years. When he died and couldn't swing his hammer no more, Miss Shine had to work. All she knowed was keeping house and cooking, so when Miss Emma Lou told her about the job at the governor's mansion, she ain't hesitated but a minute. Miss Shine was kind of nervous about working in a place as fancy as the governor's mansion, but Miss Emma Lou straightened her out quick. "Honey, child, the governor and his wife is simple country folks. They don't put on airs till foreigners come round. They eat, sleep, and pee out of holes like anybody else. You remember that, and you'll do all right," Miss Emma Lou said. But all them fancy place settings, 3 or 4 different kind of forks and spoons, pouring tea before supper, I just don't know, Emma Lou. "Colored folks, as you know, is the most amazing people on this earth. Anything we put our minds to and our hearts into, we can get done good, and most times better than that. You'll never, if you can do a thing till you try, and a try has never failed." Miss Emma Lou finished her speech by spitting in her spit cup like she always do. "Emma Lou, I'll do the best I can. Thank you for the blessing." Miss Shine got the job, and she caught on quick. The funniest thing she had to do was pouring tea. Every day around 4 o'clock, the governor's wife, Emmy, rung a silver bell. That was Miss Shine's signal to pour boiling water in a great big silver teapot that sit on a big silver tray set with easy-to-break china cups and saucers and real silver spoons. Every day the governor say the same thing. "Shine, pour me up a cup full with round about 6 spoons of sugar. I like mine sweet as Miss Emmy here." If there wasn't no company, Miss Emmy would crow like a rooster and say, "Doggone it, if it ain't tea time again. Cheers, Daddy." They would sit in the living room, quiet as 2 rocks in a river, except for the slurping of that sweet tea, for exactly 13 minutes. Then Miss Emmy would ring her little silver bell, and Miss Shine would either pour some more tea or roll the cart back in the kitchen. Madam Waters, the head cook, would start heaping food and serving dishes, and Miss Shine would take off her white apron and start walking to the bus stop. It was 1.5 miles easy. She'd wait with the other maids who worked after 4 o'clock for the last bus to town. From downtown, she'd have to catch another bus home to the projects. Weeks before the first Christmas pine was chopped for decoration, Miss Shine was in charge of polishing cabinets full of silver, starching closets full of linen, and her biggest job, but the one she loved the best and saved for last, was cleaning the grand French crystal chandelier that hung in the main entry hall to the mansion. She said cleaning the 814 crystals all by hand gave her time to think. Her chandelier cleaning ritual went something like this. "I climb the ladder with my cleaning bucket in one hand. Once I get to the top, I untwist the wire that thread through a little bitty hole in the crystal head. The wire hold the crystal on the big brass-tiered circles. I put many crystals as I can in the bucket. Then I soak some in ammonia and lemon juice. Then I rinses them with real hot water and lay them on clean white towels. Then I polish them with spit and a soft flannel cloth till they shine like pure diamonds." 2 days before the singing, a strong feeling passed over Miss Shine like something bad was about to happen. She was sitting on top of the ladder in the entry hall taking the crystals down. She said it was like a heavy cloud pressed down on her and hung on her heart. She was near about done up there, so she eased down off the ladder and set up in the kitchen pantry, polishing them chandelier crystals with sabit and shining them with a white flannel rag. She polished the big round crystal with a thousand faces that was big as a Florida grapefruit with special care, rubbing it like she used to rub on Mr. Polk's bald head to get him to go to sleep at night. It hung from the middle of the chandelier. She spit shined and rag rubbed till she could see her face. That was the color of a grocery sack, and every flat edge like a mirror. Christmas Eve day, the snow started falling around noon. Fat white flakes covered the ground like one of Aunt Judy's wedding quilts. The governor and his family invited some friends and neighbors over to the mansion to have an early supper. Just as they was finishing their meal, the three yellow school buses rolled round the circle driveway and parked on the side in the bus parking spaces. The governor, Miss Emmy, and they few friends went out on the front porch to watch the first group assemble round that 25-foot Christmas tree, all decorated and lit up in the middle of that lawn all covered with snow. Miss Shine dried her hands on her apron and stood in the front window, looking out from behind the curtains, her heart near about busting with joy. She knowed we was gonna do her proud that night. The first group of them white children sang their Christmas carols in high-pitched cut-off notes that didn't sound right to us, nor Miss Shine, but she clapped when they was done with jingle bells and we wish you a Merry Christmas and White Christmas, even though they messed up them songs like broke glass on bicycle tires. The second group wasn't much better. They was from a church-run school, so they sang a lot of hymns. Like the first group, every one of them was white and dressed alike, in blue jackets with pants for the boys and skirts for the girls. Miss Shine wasn't impressed, but she clapped for them, too. Then, us color children broke loose. We arranged ourselves round that Christmas tree, holding hands in a circle. We was wearing long white robes with gold sashes over our shoulders, looking like black angels. Miss Shine felt faint. Oh, come all you faithful away in a manger, oh holy night. And just when she thought she couldn't take no more heavenly sounds, I led the choir in Silent Night. When I was done, there was a deep hush, quiet like even God had stopped and what she was doing to listen. I was feeling the spirit because God was leading that song. Miss Shine almost forgot where she was. She clapped long and loud, put her hand over her heart, and kept clapping on her hip with a free hand even when we was heading for our bus. She could see Glodine, Jimmy, Pearl, me, and the others dancing round that tree, like we was at home round the chinaberry tree in July. The governor went out on the lawn as we was gathering near our separate buses. I remember it clear as day. The governor's speech went something like this. That was some real nice caroling, children. You all did a fine job. How about another round of applause for everybody? He said everybody like it hurt him. Then he said, I would like to take this opportunity to invite Middle T. Morris School and St. Joseph's Academy to join my wife and myself and our guests in the mansion for a cup of hot chocolate. That was some mighty fine singing from my alma mater and rival school. Come on in, children. Merry Christmas to you. He waved the white children over to the front door and welcomed them with a handshake into the entry hall of the mansion. Something inside of Miss Shine broke in two when she saw our faces. Glodine and the others looked soft and sad like they was going to cry. Jimmy's face was hard like he wanted to pitch a brick through the front windows of the mansion. Pearl looked like she didn't expect no less. I was just too ashamed to look anywhere but down at the ground. I couldn't believe that after he hurt God in my song, he could be so mean and cold-hearted. Miss Emmy rushed into the entry hall and found Miss Shine still as a statue, standing at the window, staring at the white children lining about the door and the colored bus pulling out of sight down the driveway. Shine, quick, fix the children some hot chocolate. There seems to be about 35 of them. Not too much sugar now, or the lambs will be up all night, Miss Emmy said, sweet as Brer Fox in the briar patch. Miss Shine walked to the kitchen with lead feet like a woman without her mind. She fixed the hot chocolate, rattling pots and pans, dropping the silver and spilling milk all over the floor. She was madder than a foam-mouthed dog. But what could she do? She poured the hot chocolate into 35 white Dixie cups for 35 thin pink lips to drink from. Her hands were trembling, and her head felt light. Her blood pressure was rising. She kept thinking that they was all just children. Why couldn't the governor see that? Color don't matter in the sight of God. The governor think he know more than God. When all the cups was full and on the rolling tea cart, Miss Shine pushed it slow into the entry hall. She heard one of the white kids say something about sending the Negroes back to the jungle and heard laughing break out round the room and saw wide grins on the governor and Miss Emmy's faces. Each one of them took a cup without even a thank you or a look in Miss Shine's direction. She left it in the Lord's hands, and she come through. With no warning, the big round crystal that hung from the middle of the chandelier fell with a loud crack on the marble floor, breaking into a million pieces. Miss Shine's mouth dropped open and her eyes got big. It didn't hurt nobody, but she took it to be a sign. "Them niggers must have sent a voodoo in here on us," one of the girls said, giggling nervous-like. Miss Shine fixed a look on that child that made her turn red as a beet and start to cry. Miss Emmy seen Miss Shine staring at the child and snapped up, "Shine, get a broom and sweep up this mess before one of these children gets hurt." She was trying to break Miss Shine's spell on the child, and she did. But Miss Shine turned to stare Miss Emmy full in the face for a long, uncomfortable minute before going back in the kitchen. Miss Shine come back and parted the crowd with the point of her broom, waving it wild, just missing knocking a few blonde heads and poking out a few blue eyes. She swept up every silver of crystal she could find. Then she put the pieces in a paper sack. After collecting all the empty cups and cleaning up the kitchen, she walked that mile and a half through the snow to a main street. She hailed a taxi that took her home. The streets was mostly empty as it was near 9 o'clock. It was cold and snow was still falling. When she got in her apartment, she turned the oven on and opened the door to warm up the kitchen. Then she pulled out a chair and stood on it. She felt round up on top of the kitchen shelf for a fat white candle she had bought at a spiritual store years before for the purpose of a ritual Miss Mary told her to do, but she never did. She sat down with it at the kitchen table, still in her coat dripping with snow. She lit the candle and sat there staring at it. She poured the broke-up crystal from the paper sack onto a piece of newspaper, spread it on the table, and looked at him while talking to herself. Then pieces of crystal still sparkled like diamonds, but every jagged edge was like a dagger in her heart. Miss Shine sat at her kitchen table till Christmas morning broke light. Sit there till the things she had to do come to her. Folks say things change, but it's still like slavery times. Miss Shine's mind eased away, way back. She heard a chant far off, deep as slave graves and old as Africa. Blood boil thick, run red like a river. Slave scream, wall, wail and moan after they're dead. Daddy Lynch, Mama raped, baby sister sold down river. Slave scream, wail and wall, moan after they're dead. The cook know what to do to save the race, stop the screams, save the blood from boiling thick, running red like a river. Miss Shine all of a sudden knowed what she had to do to save the race. It come to her like in a dream, but it was real. It was a story told to her a long time ago. In slavery times, the cook had a heap of power. They stole food to feed the children and keep them from dying before they was sold off. Fed the men scraps of lean meat to give them the strength to find freedom and bring it back home. The cook had the power to poison the master, too. When the beatings, killings, and selling off a family was too much to bear, oftentimes the cook would use her knowledge of herbs and roots to make her white master sick, sometimes die. Miss Shine was possessed by her power. She snatched off her coat and white apron and went into her bedroom to get the wood bowl her mama gave her and the iron head of Mr. Polk's hammer. She came back to the table spread with all that broke crystal and ground it up with the head of the hammer in her mama's wooden bowl. She ground it till sweat dripped off her face into the bowl. She ground it till the crystals was as fine as dust and tied the pile of it in a corner of her slip. She burnt the bowl in her tin bathtub and flushed the ashes down the toilet. Then she wrapped the hammerhead in flannel and put it away. Nobody know how the master gets sick. Nobody know how he die. The doctors won't know why he pain so in his stomach. The grind be so fine he think it'd be root work and be scared of us from then on. The cooks kept whispering in her ears, chanting. When Miss Shine had to go back to work after New Year's, she was ready, almost happy. All the other women on the maid's bus was grumbling about having to go back to work. Somebody got to pay them bill collectors, a voice in the back of the bus hollered out. That put everybody in a good mood. Miss Shine was really wanting to get to the mansion that morning. Miss Emmy stopped her from washing the lunch dishes to tell her they was having a guest to dinner and he was going to have tea with them. Miss Shine yes ma'amed her, looking direct in her eyes. Miss Emmy wasn't used to colors making eye contact, and she near about ran out of the kitchen. Miss Shine went on, as usual, fixing tea. She put the kettle on to boil. Blood boil thick. She kept hearing the whispers. She poured the boiling water over the tea leaves and strained it into the big silver teapot. Run red like a raging river. She took down three china cups with a flower pattern and set them straight on matching saucers. Nobody know how the master gets sick. Miss Shine put everything on the big tea cart. Nobody know how he die. She untied the knot in the corner of her slip, emptied the powder into the sugar bowl, and stirred it up good. You done good, sister. You done right. We can rest now. That was the last whisper. Miss Shine smiled before she served the governor, Miss Emmy, and the stone-faced guest, a South Georgia mayor with a beer belly and a mouthful of negras. Miss Shine kept pouring tea for the governor and Miss Emmy for more than 2 weeks before she disappeared. Some folks say she moved to an entirely colored town in Texas. Other folks say she wasn't really of this world in the first place. Nobody living ever saw Miss Shine again. She told me this story the day Aunt Judy sent me to her house with a piece of Christmas cake, 2 days before she disappeared. The doctor that examined the governor couldn't find nothing wrong with him. As delicate as she looked, Miss Emmy must have had an iron stomach. She wasn't but a little bit sick. The governor suffered stomach pains for the rest of his life. He got cancer of the intestines at the age of 72 and died after a long and painful sickness. From then on, the school chorus started singing Christmas carols at the colored nursing home every year to honor our own folk. Nobody never talked about wanting to sing for the governor no more. Every time I sing, the spirit can move solo. I dedicate it to Miss Shine. Wherever she is, always remember your ancestors. I hope you enjoyed that. That was Shay Youngblood's Spit in the Governor's Tea. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G, and I'm going to leave you with some music for the night. Until next time, be safe out there, and good night.